Hello, I'm Charlie Brooker, and welcome to So Wrong It's Right, the show that claims some things are so wrong, they're right. A funny concept, which unfortunately, according to my lawyer, is not a valid legal defence. It's the panel show where saying the wrong thing can earn you points, unlike in the real world, where it generally just results in a stony silence that's ultimately just another cold nail in the coffin of your failing relationship. Still, let's keep it light. My father always said I'd be a failure. Throughout my life, I've worked hard to overcome that stigma, and it's only now, as an adult sitting here, looking into the faces of our audience and our panel of guests, that I can say finally to him, yeah, Dad, well done, you were right. Let's meet tonight's guests, who are planning to snatch defeat from the jaws of themselves. We've got Richard Herring, Lisa Tarbuck, and Jack Whitehall. First round, OK, is called Wrong Time, Wrong Place. I'll be asking my guests to dust off the skeletons in their closets in an attempt to out-wrong each other with belittling and embarrassing stories from their own sorry, insignificant, meaningless, fleeting and, quite frankly, disgusting little lives. Sorry, I don't want to judge you. But that's clearly what I've just done. Anyway, this week's theme is excuses. What's the worst excuse you've ever given? There's going to be a point for the best worst answer. He started it, my PE kit's in the wash, and I left my bag on the bus are poor excuses for school kids. Jeanette Cranky is another. The Nazis were big on excuses. Goebbels famously said, the bigger the lie, the more people will believe it, which is rubbish. The student loan company didn't believe it when I phoned to say I couldn't keep up the repayments because I'd recently died at the Battle of Hastings. Lisa, what's the worst excuse you've ever used?
Well, I used to, when I was quite skint and Mum and Dad went out but didn't take Dad's car, I used to siphon petrol out of his car into my Mini Clubman.
This is not the glamorous showbiz life I was expecting.
Dad kept us on quite a tight leash. So I had a Mini Clubman. Now, obviously, there's no boot that you can hide things in. So I've got the rubber coil. Now it's become something of a habit.
What, you can't start a car without stealing petrol?
I can't leave the hose anywhere that Dad will find it because it reeks of petrol and I've got quite paranoid about it. So I just leave it in the boot of the car. But it's not a boot because you can see it. So I get stopped by a policeman who asks me what the rubber hose in the back of the car's for. Because as far as he's concerned, it looks like it could be something that would be used to siphon petrol off. And I told him, it is. Smell it, it is. Because what I do of an evening is siphon Dad's petrol off when he goes off to work. And he doesn't know. And he's gone, yeah, all right. I do.
But that's not really an excuse. That's the truth. That's a reason.
I turned it on its head. I could have given him an excuse. Sure.
Did he sniff the hose?
It isn't an excuse.
It's such wrong. Did he sniff the hose?
No, Charlie, he didn't.
Did he buy your excuse?
He whisked me away. He'd had enough of me and my big grinning face, daring him to sniff the hose.
Was it that weird psychological trick you can do?
Yeah.
Like, there was a friend of mine I heard about who was walking through Reading late at night, which can be dangerous, and a guy came over to him and said, "What's the time?" And he looked at him, told him, and then the guy said, "Thanks, give me your money." Right? And he realised it was a mugging situation, and instead of giving him his money, what he did was he turned his palms up like that and stared into his hands and started going, "Spiders." Spiders, spiders everywhere, spiders, and the mugger ran away. Good advice, good thing to know about in life.
That's mad.
So what you had done...
Three times out of four you get shot in the face with that one. as a warning.
This was in a happier time. Jack, what's the worst... Yeah, the lamest excuse you've ever...
The lamest are always the same. Like, I mean, you know, oh, sorry, miss, the naughty dog ate it. I never got asked back to babysit. But, other real ones that I've told. Because my big thing at school that I always got really annoyed about, and I don't know why, I shouldn't have got that upset by it, but the fact that, because I was never good at any sport and I wasn't very athletic and I was rubbish and I hated, like, gym and swimming and all of that. Girls, every time, women's problems, no one questions it. if you say women's problems, you don't have to do gym, you don't have to do swimming. And I...
They do if you're not. No. You haven't hit puberty yet.
Well, no. But at a certain age, like, that cannot be questioned. So my big campaign was for men's problems. That's what I want. So I had this thing where I was like, no, I don't want to do swimming because I have men's problems. I have an issue standing in a shower next to someone that, you know, is more...
Developed,
yes, because A, it makes me feel inadequate, and B, it's weird that it's the art teacher. That's why I'm not swimming.
No, I agree. I think that the changing room is a terrible, terrible thing. It's like, because when you're at school, those are your workmates, essentially, yeah. Isn't it? It's like, there's not many, if you've ever worked in an office, there's not many incidences where you'd have to strip off in front of everyone else there. Because you can't, of course you're going to look at what everyone else has got going on. I saw a drama documentary several years ago about a dirty bomb in London. It was like, what if a dirty bomb went off in London? And the most astonishing thing was they called all these workers out of an office and made them strip off and hosed them down. And I just thought that would be quite interesting, wouldn't it? Yeah. Like, that would be the one upside of a dirty bomb, is you'd get to see your boss's bum. Richard, what is the worst excuse you've ever used?
Well, I remember when I was at infant school, it was always embarrassing to go to the toilet for a number two, let's say. So you would always try and not... There was always a stigma attached to that.
I think there still is, as far as I know.
Yeah. So, a little bit. And so as a six-year-old, I really need to go to the toilet. And I actually, to the extent that I was so embarrassed to go to the toilets, that I actually just went in my pants. And I was wearing little, you know, shorts at the time. And I was trying to get away with this. Obviously, it was quite difficult because there was a smell. And I remember the other kids going, what's that? There's an odd smell. And I went, and we were in the classroom, and I said, yes, I think there's a naughty dog outside. He's starting... And that was my excuse, and that they believed that. They were 6 years old. They were stupid.
So you claimed that a dog standing outside
had done a poo so foul that the stench should come into
the
classroom.
It's not naughty for a dog, though.
It's not naughty anyway, really, is it? It's just hideous.
It is naughty. I was a little... It's quite cute. I was a little... I wasn't... I was a child at the time. I don't know if I made that
not
clear.
A dog.
I wasn't just the teacher.
Were you punished? Were you...
No, I just ran to the toilets and then... I hid in there until my mum came to pick me up.
That's quite a feeble excuse.
Thank
but
you.
Not but I mean quite creative to have blamed it on an invisible dog outside the building. That sounds like the sort of thing a serial killer would do. I think that was the Son of Sam's defence, genuinely. He said that his
dog had told him.
He blamed it on a neighbour's dog. Yeah. Well, I'd say that the most feeble excuse has got to be Lisa's, because it wasn't even an excuse. It was just a reason. So, that's a point to you, Lisa.
Thanks very much.
Our next round is called Do Your Worst. I'll be stretching my guests' imaginations by asking them to come up with an incredibly bad idea. This week, I've asked them to pitch me gimmicky new concepts for detective shows. My favourite TV detectives tend to be the drunk, angry, troubled and misogynistic ones. And if they look like me as well, so much the better. My parents were such fans of the Jersey-based sleuth Bergerac that every summer we'd all get in the camper van, hit the motorway and spend 2 weeks parked opposite John Nettle's home in Aylesbury, cataloguing his every move. That's true. In my opinion, the greatest detective show of all time, perhaps the greatest TV show of all time, is The Wire. In fact, I consider it the single greatest work of art in human history, greater even than the Pyramids, Paradise Lost, or the Sistine Chapel. A more significant accomplishment than the splitting of the atom, containing more truth about human nature, more wit and beauty than all the works of Shakespeare combined. All hail to The Wire, I say all hail. Although season 5 was a bit poop, to be honest. Anyway, back to what I was saying a minute ago, which is that I'm going to ask you to come up with gimmicky new concepts for detective shows. The worst one is going to win a point. Lisa, what's your detective show all about?
The hardest thing about this is, as weird and wonderful as your mind can take you, it's been done. So I've come up with, you've got this policeman, and he's a lapsed Catholic. His parents are probably Irish. And he's chummed up with a radical feminist type. And I don't mind whether it's a man or a woman.
This does just sound like a Jimmy McGovern screenplay.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're onto this particular crime when he starts getting dreams about a baby that
you've
is always
really
worked.
This is a full treatment you've worked.
This was two walks in Highgate Woods, this was. A baby that is wrapped in things, because obviously the baby can't speak, but he's letting this bloke know the clue is in where I am or what I'm wearing. And the guy, who's up going to a therapist...
Yeah. So, hang on a minute.
I'm lost my way, am I? No, I haven't lost
my way. This Irish lapsed Catholic guy, O'Guilty, or whatever he's called.
Yeah.
He's having visions of a baby.
Yeah.
That's right.
That he starts to share with his cohort. And just says, I think I'm going a bit crazy. Till it, for example, the baby is draped in a map. So he starts to notice these are things that are giving him clues to solving crimes that they're already on. But then then they start to wonder why it's this particular baby doing it all the time.
As well they might.
Exactly. And you won't find out about that till episode 10.
Have you brought in some scripts for this? We're going to read them out.
Who do you see?
Let's forget this show. I want the map, maybe.
I'm thinking Ken Stott for the lead. And
I think he's too old now, actually.
Really?
He could be the cohort, in fact, or the boss.
Maybe. He could be the baby. You could be the baby, Jack.
You could be the baby.
Jack could be the baby.
What? That's remarkable. Because what you've done there, you haven't just come up with a concept. You've had a breakdown. Genuinely, that is more fleshed out, I think, than most sort of high-concept American TV shows that are around.
Every time I thought about a telepathy or something, I just thought, well, that's Midsummer Murders, that's blimmin'... I even went... A fantastic story about set in the past from a fella who went back... And I thought, well, that's Life on Mars.
Yeah,
everything's been done.
Not the map, baby, hasn't that?
Jack, I'll move to you.
Quickly.
Okay, so it's like set in a leafy village in middle England, like kind of midsummer. But here's the twist. There are no murders. Nothing happens. And the chief detective, Barnaby, he is very nice. He is happily married. He gets on very well with his detective co-partner. His boss is brilliant. He doesn't drink. I mean, he got drunk once about four Christmases ago, but since then, he hasn't touched a drop. He's a very nice, down-to-earth, solid guy. And what he does is he goes around and he solves all of these cases which happen in the village, and basically, they're all very petty, farm-based squabbles and or a lot of paperwork. Series finale, one of the farmers suspects that one of his cattle might have been murdered by someone else in the village, but after minor investigation by Detective Barnaby, it turns out that the cow died of natural causes. Back to the office, bit more paperwork, and they're going to sort out moving a felled tree from a busy high street.
That is effectively an entire year's worth of Emmerdale.
Yeah.
That is Emmerdale.
I've either got that or Hobocop, which is Robocop, but he's homeless. Or Touch of Frost, which is like there's a detective called Jack Frost that just inappropriately gropes other co-workers.
I can see that. That okay. So Richard, what's your?
I think I've got a couple. I'd quite like to do something that has the kind of gritty realism of The Wire, but that just one of the police officers is a Power Ranger and just uses that all the time. Just uses, or like maybe a cartoon mouse that can talk, or some just or someone with a superpower that just makes it easy to solve everything. So I'd quite like to do that. I'd quite like to do one called PC Jesus. Jesus is back, and this time he's a police constable. It's kind of quite useful as a police constable because he's omnipresent, so he can see absolutely everything as it happens. So it would be quite a bad program because everyone would get solved straight away.
Then
Jesus would just forgive all the criminals. But they'd be back out on the street and be able to do more crime.
I was going to ask, why isn't he preventing this?
Well, you could ask that about the world in general, couldn't you? Yeah. Jesus could have stopped everything. All the horrible crimes that have happened recently, Jesus could have just copped in and gone, oh, come on.
Is that the show's message? At the end of each episode, as they're leading the murderer to the cell, someone goes, but why don't I understand Jesus? Why don't you just stop this? And he just looks round down the lens and raises an eyebrow. know what? I would definitely watch it. So for that reason alone, I'm going to give you a point.
Thank you.
This round is called This Putrid Modern Hell. And in it, I'll be asking each of my guests to nominate the thing they dislike most about contemporary life. My favourite answer wins a point. Like many of us, I thought the biggest developments of the 21st century would involve the introduction of jetpacks, holidays on the moon, and robot concubines in every home. Instead, we got Simon Cowell and Nando's. I'm a sucker for modern technology. If it's new, I have to have it. I know it's sad, but I was queuing outside the shop when shredded wheat bite-size went multigrain. Anyway, so modern life. Jack, we'll start with you. Jack, what annoys you about this modern world?
Well, I have one that I've recently had to encounter. And I mentioned briefly earlier that I have a problem with gyms and changing rooms, but I wanted to make it a little bit more broad because I joined the gym the other day and it's quite like an intimidating place for some... Because I don't have any like muscular tissue on my entire body. So I went in there and they've got all these things like, you know, the treadmills to build up your stamina and then the weights to build up your muscles. And then I was just there. I just wanted to build up my self-esteem, but there's no area for that. And I got a personal trainer. And the personal trainer, like, is the scariest thing ever. Because I had a guy called Mike who was, like, a proper kind of, like, beefcake, like, ex-army or something. He was, like, a big guy. And just pushed me to the limit. And I lost it. And he was just, you know, go on, Jack. He was like, push yourself. Embrace the burn. Embrace the burn, Jack. Look at my body. How do you think I got to where I am today? I don't know, Mike. Maybe because you didn't listen at school. So my issue is Mike specifically, personal trainers. I hated it.
Why?
I'm never going back.
But did you go? Because I went to a gym once. Right, I went to a gym once. I went to the induction day at a gym. They were all so nice. Everyone at the gym was so nice, it really made me angry. There was some reason. Because I went there thinking, I don't like gyms and I don't like the people in them. I'm going to hate this. And I was sort of standing there being all surly at the back while they were showing everyone how all the machines worked. And they were so pleasant and like and non-judgmental that I just wanted to hit everyone in there. That's good. Okay, so gyms, basically. Richard, I will leap.
I kind of hate the fact it's an environmental thing that kind of the global warming's happening and that really no one cares. And then there's loads of things everyone could do to stop it happening and none of us are really doing them. And the world's going to be destroyed, but none of us really, you know, in 50 years' time the world will be underwater basically because of this.
Yeah, and whatever.
And no one gets the people leave their TVs on standby, right? You know, the world's going to be destroyed because it creates a lot of pollution. You know, if you just turn the TV set off manually, it would solve the problem, but that would mean getting up out of your seat, walking four paces across the room, bending over and pressing a button. You can, like in Victorian times, you can imagine why people aren't prepared to do that to save the world, can't you? It's a lot to ask to save the world. It sounds like sarcastic almost when I say that, but because that's not the whole story. You do have to then walk the four paces back to the sofa and sit back down again. So,
are you saying they could solve global warming by issuing us with sort of 2-meter-long sticks?
Maybe. Or just if people would walk... I mean, I'd do it as well. My TV's on standby now at home, but, you know, it's a 4-mile trip back to my house. I don't want to have to walk another four paces after all that to turn on. It just, you know, I don't care, because I'm, you know, I've got no kids. I've deliberately made myself sexually repellent, so I will never breed. I've lived a kind of profligate lifestyle that means I'll be dead by the time all this happens. But a lot of people have kids and stuff, and, you know, then in 50 years' time, your kids and grandkids will be underwater going, why... there's 4 billion people in the world. If you know, the water's rising. If everyone just drank an extra litre of water a day, more than they usually have, and held it in, 4 billion litres of water just bang, gone like that. That's the capacity of the Pacific Ocean, I imagine. I don't know. I haven't really looked into it.
I'm no scientist.
if you couldn't hold it in, just have to go in the bath with the plug in.
Store it somewhere above sea level and it'll all be all right. Yeah, freeze fine. It.
Yeah.
Why don't we freeze it?
Mate, yeah, make a big fridge in this. That probably won't create any problems. Yeah. Store water in it.
Or you could push natural sponges down into your stomach.
Yeah.
And then it would hold it there so you wouldn't need to wee.
Yes, you're right.
Perfect.
That's a nightmare vision of the future, isn't it?
Yeah.
The government ordering you to push sponges down your throat. Lisa.
I'm going to go for that sort of veneer of service that you get from the world as a corporation, as it's become, in that they've got to have, for example, a call centre when you ring up, and it's just like, hello, I'm Denise, how can I help you? And you just say, I don't think you're going to be able to help me, Denise, because it's quite a complicated issue. And in the middle of me explaining to you, you're going to say to me, I've got to go to the manager and check this. So why don't we cut out the middleman and give me the manager straight away, please? Only, Denise, that can't compute, so you have to do it all. Then you put on weight with something hideous on the WhatsApp. And actually, I've begun to find that where anybody is offering a service, everyone's trained to a nice shell-like level, but there's no depth of knowledge to it, because there can't be. Because why would you know everything about, I don't know, an integrated oven? How could you?
Can I just throw one other little one out there, because this is something that struck me recently that really annoyed me, was people got really annoyed about Barack Obama getting the Nobel Peace Prize. And I did a little bit of research into the Nobel Prize system, and I am livid with the Nobel Prize system, because the stuff they give it to, I looked, this year, the Nobel Prize for Physics was given to three Japanese scientists that had developed a thing called split symmetry theory, which is to do with human interaction with the space around it. And you think, to the Nobel Prize committee, have you seen the iPhone? There is an application on that where you can find any Nando's in the country and the quickest route to it, and you're giving it to three Japanese guys that worked out where you can do a pee in a vacuum. No. Because that's not what that award should be about. Because they give it, like, Albert Nobel, he invented dynamite. That's cool. They're like, oh, yeah, we're going to give the chemistry prize this year to some guy that invented a medicine for duck aids. No. Give it to the guy that invented poppers.
No. I disagree.
The point.
Because the guy who invented the iPhone, or one of the many other phones...
He's a genius! That are,
no, yes, but he will be rewarded with riches and sexual favours and a page on Wikipedia, right? So, whereas the three Japanese scientists who have come up with this probably not very glamorous theory that's very... That's what the Nobel Prize is for. It's to shine a light on boring stuff. Sure.
Yeah, but dynamite. You invented dynamite, Nobel. That's cool.
Yeah, but the formula for dynamite is boring.
Yeah. I don't think it's fair because they're set, aren't they? The categories are set. There's no Nobel Prize for a Radio 4 quiz show, for example. Yeah. And yet you get like £1 million. If you win the Nobel Prize for Literature, it's like nearly £1 million.
Yeah.
And I'm going to start writing poems just on the off chance.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, right. End of the round. That was... okay, so Jack, you had personal trainers, gyms, the Nobel Prize, basically every aspect of the modern world. Richard, you had ecological apathy, leaving televisions on standby.
Wish I'd thought of that.
It's quite serious. George Monbiot. I don't know whether it's that George Monbiot. I should know. I'd rather forget. George Monbiot or George Monbiot? imagine, he doesn't need, it's a silent T. Imagine all the resources that have gone into printing those silent T's throughout the years. What an ecological monster. That's a good point, I've just thought of that. Yeah. And Lisa, you had customer services that don't actually care. Oh, what a cynic you are. You know what, since it's actually going to threaten and kill us all, I'm going to give a point to Richard. Now to our final round, in which I'll be asking my guests a series of quick-fire questions. As ever, the wrongest answer to each one wins a point. We will start with, what's the worst thing you've ever done for money?
At a party once, for £50, I tried to eat a whole packet of butter.
That is the sort of thing, once you've started, if you don't make it to the end, you're going to look stupid.
Yeah,
whereas there's some sort of victory.
I failed. It was so disgusting. I did get two mouthfuls, which is the worst possible. Yeah. Because it's quite rich.
I always use Flora. It's so much easier.
Has anyone...
worst thing I did, it was quite recent, I did a corporate for a lot of banks in the UK, and I was the most inappropriate person they could have chosen. And I went on stage, and it turned out that RBS was sat in the front row, and I'd noticed that one of the RBS bankers hadn't finished his meal, so I said, eat up, I paid for that meal. Not popular.
You know what? I'm going to give you a point, though, Richard. I'm sorry. I've got to give you a point. Eating a pound of butter. Failing to eat a pound of butter. Just pathetic. OK, what's the worst subject for a protest song?
Too much love.
That is a song, isn't it? Too much love will kill you.
Is it? Yeah. Is it really?
Too much love. Who sang that? Too much love will kill you. It will kill you every time.
Queen.
Oh, yeah, it's sort of a... It's a tragic,
all right. The weirdest protest, it's not like a protest thing, but it's a charity event that I had to do, which I'm about to slag off the charity technically, which I don't mean to because I'm meant to be a patron of them, not for much longer. But I went and did it. It was called Save the Rhino, and that was all about saving the rhino and stuff. And they gave me these pamphlets to read out at the beginning to give some information. And the first fact was like, there are only 40,000 rhinos left in the wild. 40,000. Like, it's like, could you not call me back when there's 12 or 10?
That's not a song.
Yeah, but it's like a protest thing. It was like a cause, I thought.
Save the remaining 40,000 rhinos.
Yeah, that's a pretty bad title.
That works.
What about a protest song about stop killing the swine flu virus?
It's almost a person too.
Yeah. Why?
Protest. I mean, protest. Blowing in the Wind is a protest song, isn't it?
Yeah.
But what is it a protest about?
It wasn't me. It was a naughty dog.
I didn't give Jack a point.
Wow, he's coming to chase me.
What's the worst shop name you've ever seen?
I saw one this morning that was quite good, called the Happy Chappy Chippy. I thought that was quite good, but it was next door to Sunlight Kebabs.
Is that how they're cooked?
There's a sandwich shop in Wickham called Baguette Me Not. But I don't think that's a very good name, because presumably if you want a sandwich, you want to say Baguette Me Not. You go in and go, Baguette Me Not. Oh. All right.
The transaction is over.
Yeah.
I did once see an off-licence as well called A View to a Drink. Just like, what? Sounded like a pun was coming. And just, well, well, you know what? I think I'm going to give Richard a point for Baguette Me Not. That noise means it's game over, making Richard this week's worst contestant. Congratulations, Richard. You're officially so wrong, you're right. Thank you all my guests and the audience. That's the end of the show. Good night.
So Wrong It's Right was hosted by Charlie Brooker with guests Lisa Tarbuck, Richard Herring and Jack Whitehall. The producer was Aled Evans and it was a Zeppotron production for BBC Radio 4.